I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, January 8th, 2021, and this is episode 102 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. Today's episode is brought to you by the newest paranormal rom-com by author Saranna DeWild, Fairy Godmothers, Inc. I think we all need some magic and love in our lives right now, and this one is a slightly twisted fairy tale featuring three real-life fairy godmothers, one very unlucky woman named Lucky, and her college boyfriend named Ransom, the most amazing names, who, and I quote, runs a chocolate empire. It's perfect for fans of Shelley Laurenston, Dorinda Jones, and Carolyn Sparks, and it's a second chance love story featuring a fake marriage between two exes in a town called Ever After, Missouri. So if you're in the mood for something charming, funny, and sexy, and I definitely am, check out Fairy Godmothers, Inc. by Saranna DeWild wherever books are sold or at kensingtonbooks.com. So this has been a difficult week, and anything that can lift your spirits and bring you into some sort of calm is very necessary. This week's best thing, lest we forget, is that the Democrats have retaken the Senate, which is a positive step. It means hopefully something good can get done in the country. I don't have a ton of faith in the Democrats either, but, you know, better than the alternative as far as I'm concerned. And we did not get a chance to really celebrate that because of the assault, riot, insurrection at the Capitol building, which happened this Wednesday. I live in Maryland. I live about 30 minutes outside of the District of Columbia. And I grew up in Maryland. My father was a Secret Service agent, which I said before. You know, I do have a lot of empathy for the actual law enforcement officers who wanted to do their jobs and who were injured doing their jobs. And one Capitol Police officer died doing his job. I also firmly believe that there are many who were complicit and that it's inexcusable. And it's like the words don't even mean anything anymore. Like, how do you express the rage and the pain and the sorrow and the just all of these things combining? It's not surprising. I mean, no one should be surprised. People who claim to be shocked are incredibly disingenuous. But it's maddening, you know, and it's been difficult to focus. It's been difficult to sleep, to work, to do anything but doom scroll and watch the news. I hate cable news, but I've been watching it nonstop and doom scrolling Twitter because you find out way more information sometimes on Twitter than on the news. And, you know, I've barely watched the news all year, honestly. But this, like, I feel like just the more things happen, the more things pile on, I'm feeling very frayed. You know, I think Becca Syme in one of the writing classes that I took from her was like, you know, you have a big plate. People who have big plates can take a lot, but then when you've filled up the big plate, you're done. And I have experienced complete and total burnout a couple of times in my life after grad school. Probably not ever as bad as it was after grad school. So I'm really focusing on what I can do myself to keep myself okay, because I feel like I've been stressed. I've had different things ever since last March, ever since the pandemic began. But this is the first time I'm really feeling like I've come to the end of my big plate. So Thursday morning, I was like, should I even get out of bed? I almost didn't. You know, I have my daily 8 a.m. writing session, and I was going to text my friends and be like, I'm just not doing it today. And then I thought about it, and I thought about, you know, this research I've been doing and getting into Ancestry. I don't know if I mentioned that I went on Ancestry.com and started building up my family tree. And so I started thinking about my great-grandparents, who were sharecroppers. And, you know, had to go through so much more. I've been incredibly privileged in my life. And so I got out of bed and I wrote. I wrote to honor my ancestors. Sometimes you stay in bed to honor your ancestors because they weren't able to. And sometimes you get your ass out of bed to honor your ancestors because they weren't able to. And so I wrote. I wrote yesterday. I wrote this morning, even though I didn't want to, even though I was a little bit late. And I'm trying to push through because I think that for me right now, pushing through is what I need to do. I don't want to wallow, you know. But I also have to take care of myself. And so there's that balance of getting the work done, feeling that sense of accomplishment. And then in the evenings, I get to sort of crash and collapse and rest. I'm hoping that all of you out there are doing what you need to do, taking care of your mental health, pulling back or pushing through, or, you know, alternating between the two as you need to. I also thought that if I don't write, the terrorists win. That was sort of an alternate way of looking at it. And also a belief that I've come to hold over the past few years that the sort of emotional weakness and emotional fragility is sort of an offshoot of white fragility, and that it's sort of taking over our culture and our society. And that's part of white supremacy, you know, like strength, emotional strength, not to the point where you work yourself to death, because, you know, it can go too far. I was actually just reading about Burt Williams, who was an early Black vaudevillian actor who was one of the biggest stars. He was incredibly talented. And he, you know, there's a documentary that was like, he literally worked himself to death to sort of prove that, you know, prove something. I don't know if he was trying to prove something to white people. I read something else that, you know, he'd gotten pneumonia while he was doing the show, and he knew he was the biggest draw for the show. And it sounded like he wanted to make sure everyone else had their job. So he kept working through the pneumonia. And that was one of the factors in terms of his early death, because he was in his 40s when he died. So you don't want to work yourself to death. But I also don't want to participate in a culture of weakness and fragility that I feel like I see a lot. And as a way of honoring my ancestors who didn't have the opportunity to be weak or fragile, or that's not true, who were forced to push through when maybe they shouldn't have, but also developed a strength that is sort of, I feel, is passed down. You know, there is the sort of myth of the strong Black woman where it can be dangerous to, because of, for example, you know, it's, I don't know if there's been studies, but it's pretty well known that in the medical community, Black people get less medicine. You know, like a doctor will see a white woman in pain and a Black woman in pain, and will give way more pain medicine to a white woman than a Black woman because they're perceived as being stronger or just not as human or whatever that is behind that. So there's definitely downsides to strength, and I don't want to minimize that. But there's a positive part of the strength that we're forced to have when you are, you know, in the position of being an oppressed, marginalized person in this country. You grow up knowing you have to do more, and you get used to it. And I don't want to do less. You know, the equality that I'm looking for is not that I can be as mediocre as other people and still, you know, get benefits. I appreciate knowing that I've had to been pushed and working very hard and having that be what I'm putting into the world. And I don't want that to be taken away. So I think my perspective is that I can both do what I'm here to do. And I do believe that my contribution to the world is important. I can do that. I can contribute, and I can also take care of myself. And the two are not mutually exclusive. You know, I can work and then I can rest after I work and keep myself in balance in that way and be mindful about my work and my efforts and trying to get stronger mentally and physically and spiritually and emotionally and not succumb. Like there's times I feel like everyone is pushing at you to sort of succumb. And there's a difference between that and caring for yourself. And that's just it can be a difficult balance to strike, but it is important for me to think about these things and to try to live my life conscious of that, you know, conscious of what do I need to feel good about myself and to honor the gifts that I've been given and the things that I think I need to share and keep myself healthy in every way so that I can continue to do that. In my writing update, I'm moving right along. I'm working on chapter 7 right now. So I do feel like maybe it is a little slow. I'd have to check my spreadsheet to see. I'm basically on schedule. Like today was chapter 7. I don't know the word count. It was something like 16,000 words. And I'm recording on Friday because I'm feeling like, oh, last week I was at like 12 or 13,000. It doesn't seem like that much, but I'm recording a couple days earlier than I did last week. So I still have the weekend to write in order to get my weekly word count. I was targeting 8,000 words a week, and I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm getting through the chapters I wanted to get through, which is actually more important than an artificial word count. My question this week that actually came up today in my writing session, because I was looking at chapter 7, I looked at my fast draft and then my notes for where I want that scene to be. And I got caught up in some more research so that I can ground the scene and figure out exactly the elements that I need to put in it. And the question about showing restraint came up. Like, it's a scene that takes place at a theater. And when I first started this project, I had this idea that I was going to have a character who was an actor who was Black and had to perform in blackface, because that's the way it was up until definitely through the 20s and 30s. And there were still blackface performers up until the 60s. But I'm not sure. I think Pigmeat Markham, again, I was watching this documentary, and he was a famous vaudevillian performer and Black, but liked the blackface. Like when the society shifted and he had to not perform anymore in blackface, he thought he had lost something because, you know, one actor had said that it, like everybody knew that they were Black. The blackface wasn't, there are a lot of reasons why, first of all, I'm not gonna sort of skate over the fact that yes, blackface is bad, but the actors themselves felt like it exaggerated their features and it allowed them to show more emotions and facial expressions because of the dark cork, the burnt cork that they put on their faces. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, he didn't want to remove the blackface. Now, is that dealing with the internalized racism, or there's probably a lot of complicated factors at play. There were a lot of people who had no use for blackface, didn't want to do it. To a certain degree, they had to, because that was the standard. And if they wanted to make a living, if they wanted to perform in front of the white audiences, but they also wore it in front of all Black audiences, which was the thing that I was trying to research, which started me down the hole. I was like, I know that Black performers performed in blackface, but did they do it at these all Black theaters? And they did, according to what I found out. Anyway, my point was that when I started writing this book, I had the idea that I was going to have this character who was an actor in blackface. And that has sort of, you know, through all of the different changes that the story has come through as I've plotted it and been writing it, that's part of one character's backstory, but you don't really ever see it in the novel. So I have this scene that I'm planning at this theater, and I was like, oh, this could be an opportunity for me to show that. Am I going to include that? Should I shift it? I mean, anything could be happening at this theater. It could be vaudeville. It could be a play. It could be a musical act. What am I going to show? Who's on stage? What is the entertainment that my characters are consuming when they go to this theater? And is this an opportunity for me to get something in? And then I was like, wait, if I'm just trying to get it in because I think it's interesting and I would like to get it in, is that the right thing to do? And so I was thinking about what I was talking about last week with Francis Ford Coppola, talking about when you have a decision to make about your story, go back to the theme. So does my desire to include this part of history in the novel, when it's not necessary for the plot. It's not important to the plot. It's just a thing that I think is an interesting thing to put in. Is that the right impulse? Or is that just showing my research? Because I do hate when you read a book and you realize that the author did all this research and they want you to know that they did it. And that's on the page and it doesn't need to be. I'm very cognizant of that, you know, to the point about street names. Like, I write with a map so I know where everyone is and where they're going. And, you know, for clarity's sake, if it's important to the scene that you know, okay, they had to go up there and make a left. Like, there's a scene where there's some people are chasing each other. And I don't mention the street names because it's not important. They're just chasing each other down an alley. There's another scene where I do, and I'm like, should I even, like, is that important? Because, or is it just proving that I know the street? Or is it important to establishing the city as, like, a character? So I'm sort of balancing having done the research, knowing DC, because this story takes place in DC, and because it takes place in the on U Street, like the U Street neighborhood is very important. That should be the character, if any location of the character. So how important is it that I describe, oh, well, she's walking down U Street, she turned down 11th Street, and, you know, yes, I'm struggling. Not struggling so much, but I'm thinking about it a lot, and I'm trying to figure out how do you make a city or a neighborhood a character, and what are the aspects of that? And, you know, in that instance, parts of the neighborhood, including the street names and the intersections and the alleys and the businesses that I've, you know, researched to find out names of businesses that were there, the types of businesses, where they were, all of that does go into making this neighborhood feel like a character and come alive in this way. But at the same time, I know that I need to show restraint and not show all my research. I'm still ruthlessly focused on moving the story forward and building the characters. And so, considerations when you're writing real things. I think about, you know, in Earthsinger, there was a part, I think in book 3, maybe book 4, where I realized I didn't know any street names in my city, in Rosira, my fantasy city. And I sat down, I had a map of kind of like a loose map of the city or of the Portside neighborhood, which is, you know, basically there's two main neighborhoods where things take place in that series. And so I drew out a grid and I drew out like, okay, where is this? Where is that? I know I've mentioned certain landmarks and I gave some streets some names. And I did mention a few of these street names at certain parts of the book. And I felt like, you know, it's just to give a sense of place. It's to give a sense that the character is, you know, a part of this community and she knows the city really well. And that's kind of the same thing that I need to do here. I just don't want it to overwhelm things. And also, as I think about my yearly writing goals, I saw in a newsletter from author Susan Denard that she was doing some sort of challenge where she's writing a short story a month. And this is something that I've thought about for years. And I was like, is this the year? I don't know. Because I'm focused on this book and I don't want to take time away from that to write a short story. And short stories aren't easy. You know, if I'm just talking about flash fiction, that might be. But I would like to write more short stories. And is it possible, you know, to take my day off, like the Saturdays when I don't write, but then I'm not taking the day off. So using any of the writing time for this book for short stories is not going to work. It would mean carving out a whole nother writing time, which might be beneficial. I mean, it's the only way I would get it done. And so it's like, it's an attractive goal to me. It's something I would like to do. I don't think that this is the year, though. Maybe one every quarter, you know, something a little bit more possible. But short stories take a lot out of me. I'm trying to think of the last one that I wrote. I tried to write. So the last one I wrote was probably the one that's in the anthology, the Where the Veil is Thin anthology. And that, I don't even remember when I started writing that. But I do remember after I wrote that, I was going to write another one because I wanted this series of fairy tales, these fairy stories. And I tried, I wrote some notes, I did a couple of sprints and it wasn't going the way I wanted it to. So, and then of course I was wrapped up in whatever novel project I had to do. So it didn't go very far. But it's still it's a loose goal. It's like a back burner goal that I don't want to give up entirely, but I do have to be realistic that, you know, trying to be hyper productive when I'm struggling to be normally or minimally productive is not a good thing to do. In that vein, there is a course by author Ronnie Lauren called Fighting for Focus that I have not taken, but it has been highly recommended. And I've been in workshops at conferences with Ronnie Lauren, and I think she has a lot of great ideas and things to say. So if you are a writer who is fighting for focus and are interested in this, the link is in my show notes. It's a teachable course. She's going to do live videos, but it also they'll be recorded so you can watch them whenever. And another author friend, Angelina Lopez, took this course and just had wonderful things to say about it. So I would encourage you to check it out if you are feeling like it's been difficult for you to focus and do your work. I'll also put a link in the show notes to this blog post by Savannah Gilbo, who is an editor and book coach. She's a StoryGrid editor, and she has a lot of great posts. She has a podcast that I've mentioned before, and this is on planning your yearly writing schedule. And so she has another approach to doing it, some similar overlaps to what Sarah Cannon is talking about. There's a free worksheet that you can get if you sign up for her mailing list. And I thought the post was a good overview of a technique that you can use. She's got printable calendars that she includes as well. And so, yes, check that out. So my goals for the upcoming week, I'm going to plan out the next week of writing, the chapters and scenes that I want to get done, which days I want to get them done on, and keep writing, keep plugging away, keep doing my work. I have been able to read a couple of books, so that is good. Part of it is just I felt kind of broken down emotionally. I needed a love story. I needed two people falling in love. I needed to read about that. I don't know if I'm going to wholeheartedly recommend them, but they did the trick for me just to have something to read to take my mind off of things and to sink back into some other world, and I really appreciated that. So I'm hoping that I will be able to continue to read. I would like to watch less TV. I would like to watch less news and do less doom scrolling. That's also part of my goal for the upcoming week. And yeah, just try to, you know, make it through. So it's looking like 2021 is going to be another rough one. So I do hope that you, whether it's reading or watching TV or staying in the bed or doing your work, I hope you find something that helps you push through. And stay safe and stay sane. And I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would appreciate a rating or review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.